Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Make sure to stop by the all-new Red Dragon Poker Room in Mount Lake Terrace featuring a full spread of Omaha High-Low Split, PLO, and Texas Hold'em games. Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, yeah, this hour of Brock and Salk is brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. Just brutal news coming yesterday when you see Robin Cano get drilled with that baseball right in the hand. Hand injuries are tough, and it seems like they just happen so often in that way, right? The hand gets caught in some way between thrown ball and the bat, and the hardwood does not give, and the ball's coming nearly 90 miles an hour in this case, and that little hand is stuck in between, and in this case, Robinson Cano's couldn't make it.
So many times they just move, that subtle movement, right?
Yeah.
That little six-inch movement, and it hits on the forearm, or they all wear that elbow gear. Not all, but Robbie does, right? He's got certainly a lot of hardware on that front arm, and just, man, why that time, that little subtle, just tiny fraction of a second, that movement to avoid that contact or let it hit somewhere else. Not yesterday.
Yeah, it's funny because if it hits you in the arm, you're probably fine.
Well, I don't think there's any question
about
that.
The act of trying to get out of the way of the ball ends up making it worse than it would have been. But, you know, sort of a fastball boring in on you, right? And maybe you don't think it's going to be coming that far in, and you start to just pull your hands back.
Yep.
At first, I think you think you're going to be able to hit it. And it just keeps coming and coming and coming. The next thing you know, it hits you right in the hand. And now you got a broken fifth metacarpal. And Robbie's going to he's going to see a specialist tomorrow. We don't know yet the extent of the injury because we got to wait to see when imaging comes back.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've been hearing, we'll see probably between 3 to 4 weeks if it's on the positive side of it, but could be as many as 6 to 8 if imaging doesn't look the way you
and
want
you
it to.
You said immediately, Robbie knew.
Oh, he knew.
So did everybody in the ballpark.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I'm going to see a specialist on Tuesday. And, see what he says from there. It's kind of the same feeling that I had when they broke my pinky toe in Japan. So it's kind of like I knew it right away.
So now you find Robinson Cano injured. And you're Scott Servais and Jerry DePoto and the rest of that group. And you're gathering last night to try to figure out what you're going to do here for the course of the next month or two without your guy. The guy who hits third every single day, who posts every single night for your team, who you're spending a ton of money on, who unfortunately is going to miss some significant time for a team that's in contention on May 14th. You've got a couple choices. You've got Romine on your team. Andrew Romine is on your team. He's, I'm going to say Austin,
why
I know.
You pause,
because I don't want to say Austin Romine.
Okay.
You've got Andrew Romine on your team who you brought in to be your utility infielder. Last year, you brought in Gordon Beckham, who's the former 8th overall pick in the draft, played for Chicago, for the White Sox for a long time, is no longer the player that he was once supposed to be, but is hitting over 300 in the minors and has played pretty darn well with a new swing. He really tore the cover off the ball in spring training and certainly has a ton of major league experience. So to bring him back up and have him play second base every day would be a perfectly normal result for a team like the Mariners.
Mm-hmm.
So you have sort of a Romine-Beckham conversation about whether or not those guys just slide in immediately to play second base, or you've got D. Gordon on your team, a guy who's been a gold glover at that position, who you converted just this year to center field, which would probably mean you would move Guillermo Heredia, who's a pretty darn good center fielder, over, let him play center for the duration of this month or two, and that means more Ben Gamel, and you probably got to bring up an extra outfielder. Maybe that means Taylor Motter.
Mm.
Maybe eventually it means Jason Wirth, although I will point out that despite the big name, Wirth has been awful. So far, a AAA is hitting just over 100. He's got an OPS of 450, and he has just one home run since getting to Tacoma. So I don't know whether that's an option, certainly for them right now. And our question is, what do you do? I would leave well enough alone. And we'll open it up to you guys here, 206-421-3776. And roughly 60% or so of you guys say you would move D. Gordon back to second base. I would not, and I don't think they're going to. And I'm not necessarily, I don't think it's like the worst idea in the world. I'm not going to, like, you know, go to my deathbed on this one. But I do think that you're trying to make him a center fielder long term.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've got pretty good options in Beckham and Romine that I would want to see if that works out first and only make moving D. Gordon a last resort if you absolutely had to.
I would have loved, yeah, sorry.
Because, by the way, there's another option in here as well, and I didn't include it in my poll, but if Beckham and Romine don't work out, a guy like Brandon Phillips is out there available as a free agent. If you just needed somebody for a couple of weeks, and Brandon Phillips hit 285 last year with 13 home runs for both the Angels and somebody else. I forget where else he was. Atlanta, I think. I mean, there are players out there, I mean, that you could just go get that would be a reasonable fill-in for the short term.
Yeah, what's amazing is even 10 years ago, how differently I look at this. You know, as much shifting and positional stuff, I don't even look at this defensively. And I don't know if that's a mistake. It feels like so much of the defense of Robbie is all about positioning. He was positioned great.
It's, I don't know, he makes man. Play. His hands are so
His hands
tremendous.
Are unbelievable. His arm is tremendous.
I think if you were to watch Taylor Motter play second base every day for the next couple of weeks, you would notice a difference.
Yes.
I don't know whether you'd notice it as much with Romine or certainly with Beckham, but if you were to watch Taylor Motter play second base every day, yeah. I think you'd notice.
Oh, I think you would too. Now, a Beckham that's been an infielder his entire life, been third baseman, been a second baseman. I don't know. That delta to me is not going to be nearly as great as what we see offensively. You know, Robbie may not be hitting for a lot of power. He's second on this team in WAR. You know, an OPS of what, 825. He's getting on base. He's been so unselfish. You know, taking pitches and taking walks and doing everything to set the table for 4, 5, 6, 7 behind it. So to me, that's where my mind is going to go. But like you, I don't mess around with D. Gordon, man. I don't move two positions. I just don't do that. And not for a guy that spent 6 months training every fiber of his being to put the gold glove away and go learn this new craft in center field.
Now, the interesting thing is what happens with, does D come to you and say, hey, Skip, if you need me, don't worry about it. I'd be happy to come do it. Because everything about him has been so unselfish and so team first. Wouldn't surprise me if that ended up happening. I think I'd still tell him to sit in center field.
Okay, now let me, boy howdy pops up here, a bunch of you on the phone. Let me just ask you this question. What helps you win each and every game? Because I don't think this has to and should be about like next year or the following year. Like this is about 2018. You just said it. They are two games back, right? They're 5 games over .500, playing tremendous ball. You know, Robbie pointed that yesterday, other than Juan Nicasio. Right, everybody else is kind of rowing and pulling their end of this. I don't want this decision, and mine isn't for 2019 and 2020. Mine is very specifically for 2018, that D. Gordon is a center fielder and let him continue to run to be a center fielder.
I 100% agree with you. Howdy.
I think you should take some phone calls. They've got some great opinions.
Oh, right. Good.
And I got a good text here who's got a completely different idea that I hadn't considered, but it kind of makes a little bit of sense. It's one that I think was at least worth talking about. All right, 206-421-3776. What would you guys do to make up for Robbie Cano in his absence? Jason's in Everett. Good morning, sir.
Morning, guys. How you doing?
Great.
I agree with Brock's last comment about you got to do what's best for the team now and not worry about next year. I say, there's only one guy on the team that's hitting a higher average than Robinson Cano and also has a gold glove at second base. I say you move him over. You don't lose the amount of hits that Robbie produces. And we have a couple outfielders that can hit. I was going to suggest we also have another great second baseman that played second base before he came over from the Brewers, but we don't have a backup shortstop. So I say we do that and put Heredia in center field. Don't lose any production. We put any of those Gordon Beckham or Taylor Motter or any of those guys over at second base, you lose a whole lot of production.
Well, but you're going to lose production either way. Hold on. You're still taking – I mean, it's not like Robbie comes – if you lose that production at second, then you just move it to center field. I mean, I don't think you're going to then get D. Gordon's production in center from whoever else plays there.
Well, Heredia is a pretty decent hitter.
I think what they think is that Heredia is a pretty good hitter against lefties, and that the numbers we've generally seen from him have come primarily against left-handed batters. The Mariners see him generally as a fourth outfielder, not a starter.
And Robbie was leading the team in on-base percentage.
Yeah,
so, I'll tell you what,
Heredia is right there. He's at 397.
It's been great.
I know that he doesn't have as many at-bats, and they limit some of that, and they put him in some of the softer landing spots, and not face nasty guys. I mean, Guillermo Heredia this year, you can make a case, he got a 397 on-base percentage, even higher than Robbie Cano, actually. Mm-hmm. Not enough plate appearances, Lydia, so you're right. I mean, Robbie's obviously, does it every day. Oh, and by the way, Robbie hasn't missed a game this year, all 39 of those.
So, hasn't made an error this year.
No, he's been tremendous. I think this is one. I don't know if I can be moved off my spot. You said this earlier. It had been fascinating after that game ended to see the brain trust.
Yeah.
right? And I'm sure the Gears, I mean, Beckham, you know, they had a doubleheader yesterday, didn't play either of them, so it was an immediate decision. There wasn't much thought. They got him, you know, out of Tacoma and on that plane, and I'm sure maybe even in the lineup today. But it'd been fascinating to hear kind of the back and forth, and is this up for discussion? You know, is this play Beckham for a week? And if this turns out with the hand specialist tomorrow, Mike, that they need to put a plate in there, surgery, going to be 8 or 9 weeks, does that change, you know, some of the course correction?
I mean, here, let me just point this out when it comes to Guillermo Heredia, and we can just at least have the facts out there. I think the opinion of playing him every day in center is very valid, and it might make sense. But understand that for his career against righties, he's a 222 hitter, 287 against lefties. If you like OPS better, it's a huge difference. 606 versus 760. I mean, he's a significantly better hitter against lefties than he is against righties. And if he's playing every day, he'll be playing generally four out of every five games against righties.
Now, how much of this is about run prevention, though? That if he plays center field in a very legit center field and D. Gordon has unbelievable range and is a Gold Glove second baseman, how much does that difference in those numbers compensate to saving a run here or there and being able to track something down and be able to do that, or D. Gordon to turn?
Yeah,
D.
but
Gordon
if then you're going to have to put D. back. And I mean, isn't that balanced out by whatever D. loses that he would have gained during the time playing center field every one of those days?
I just like to see D. play second base one game with a center field glove.
That'd be good. That's the rule. Look, you can play second.
Just one game.
But you got to use that giant glove. Jason's in Mukilteo. Jason, what would you do?
When I first saw this, I thought it was kind of a no-brainer to move D to second. Then you have Redia in center field, and I think your defensive production stays about the same that way. But the longer I thought about it, there's just something in my gut that tells me that that is not the right thing to do, that maybe D will have trouble transitioning back to center after he's played second. I really don't think that that's the right option.
Yeah, it's funny. I think I'm probably there with you as well, that initially when it comes down, at least you have that security blanket of someone that has been there and done it at the highest of levels. And that's what he was. But, you know, I do think a little bit further, and I think of the last 6 months. I think of all of that work and what you've asked D to do in his career in a massive U-turn. A massive U-turn that you've gone down this way, and I'm asking you, man. I'm asking you to sacrifice. I'm asking you to put extra time in. I'm asking you to do all of these things, because we believe you can be a pretty elite center fielder over the course of this season and in the years to come, especially with more and more reps, you know, and to get that chance. I'm also hopeful. I'm hopeful that Robbie Cano is one of the toughest suckers that we have been around as a pro in his 5 years here, and that he's going to be a quick healer, and it's going to be, you know, 4 to 5 weeks, and you're going to be able to compensate and keep D exactly where he's getting comfortable.
Yeah, so what do you want to do? 206-421-3776. Robbie Cano going to miss some time. How would you handle it? Now, Brock, if we find out he's done for the year, and I don't think that'll be the case, I might change my mind on this. At least I would think about it. But I would want to give Gordon Beckham a shot. He's been tearing the cover off the ball in AAA, sitting over 300. He's got some power. He was the number 8 pick in the draft. He's a really athletic guy. He has redone and reworked his swing, and it seems to be paying some dividends for him. I'm not saying that he's not going to be Robinson Cano. I don't know who is. But can he be a better everyday major leaguer than Guillermo Heredia? And now I'm saying this with Heredia, one of my favorite players on this team.
Right.
I love him as a role player. I don't know that I think he can handle that job as long as they would need to give it to him.
But the alternative is to have Gordon Beckham do that, and he's in the same situation, right?
Yeah, I mean, one of them is going to have to be in there. I think I would want to see what Beckham does first as well. Yeah, I think I would
Beckham can't beat out Andrew Romine for the last spot on the roster right now. So why is he going to be better than Guillermo Heredia?
Because Gordon Beckham doesn't play short and third as well
and
as,
left
as
and
Austin
catcher.
Romine.
He's also a career 239 hitter with a 672 OPS at 31 years old, and every team in the league passed him over for a starting spot.
All true, and yet he's been hitting the ball really well with a new swing, and so I'm willing to give it a shot.
And Howdy,
you can always change
guys.
Your mind on Gordon Beckham. That's
he's a
the
good,
good
dude, Howdy.
That's good. Yeah,
he's
a great dude.
I don't
good
care
guy.
What a good dude he is. I think you can change your mind pretty quickly if he comes up and he looks like he doesn't belong. But everything we saw when he was up in spring training, everything we saw so far from him this year, tells me that it's worth giving him a shot. And if it doesn't work, believe me, you got other options available to you. You can try Austin Romine, but I think you like him more in the super sub role. You can try Taylor Motter if you're looking for occasional right-handed pop and not much else. And you can try the whole D. Gordon thing if you absolutely have to. So those would be my thoughts. Let's see what Brian in Bellevue thinks. Brian, go ahead.
Good morning, guys. I would ask D. Gordon if he feels like he could be flexible for a couple months. I mean, Ben Zobrist is not a superhero. This is not rocket science. The ideal situation would be D. Gordon being able to play either or game by game by game as you try to cobble wins together.
Yeah, Brian,
that's an unreasonable situation.
Yeah, that is a great point. It'd be fascinating, wouldn't it?
I would love to hear what D. had to say.
If they had that, they called him in. Right, if they even approached him on that or how they go about that.
We'll hopefully find out. I mean, we'll be down, I think, at Safeco Field on Wednesday. Generally, before day games, we get to go down there and talk to Scott Service.
Oh, nice.
So I will assume that we don't have confirmation on that yet. So my apologies if it doesn't work out. But I think we'll probably get a chance to talk to Scott about this.
What's your gut say on
that?
Your gut say that they ask him?
No, absolutely not. Now, it doesn't mean that he doesn't ask for a meeting with the skip and say, hey, Skip, I'd really like to play second base for a little while. I just want to help the team best as possible. And they say, hey, we appreciate it. If it's going to go on longer than expected, maybe we'll talk about it. But for now, why don't you just play center field?
Hey, Kyle, was there any nervous energy, you think, when Service talked to D? Can you imagine what that conversation sounded like with Cano's injury?
Well, Robbie Cano kind of took a ball off the hand there. No, but we're lucky we've got options. Gordon Beckham's hitting the cover off the ball, so we should be all right.
Just keep telling yourself that. Let's grab Rick, who's in Seattle. Good morning, Rick. What's up?
Yeah, I think you guys can agree with me that D. Gordon has been one of the most, if not the most important Mariner so far this year. If I'm Scott Service, I'd keep D out in center field and put Taylor Motter at second base, and I'd have confidence in Motter until Cano comes back.
Tell you what, man, Motter's shoes killed me earlier this season, too.
By the way, it won't be Motter. Let me just be clear. It will not be Taylor Motter. If someone's called up today, I am 99.9% sure it will be Gordon Beckham. Yeah. I don't think this is Taylor Motter's job for a little while. They just don't. I don't think they look at him as somebody who can play the infield every single day. I don't think he's got. I think they worry about some of the concentration for good reason.
Yeah, I mean, is this a little bit of? Is this a little bit of the unknown? Kind of excited about the unknown that we have seen Motter and seen some of his struggles in the league adjust to him last year, and it's not quite there. That you've seen Heredia, and yeah, against righties and good righties, going to be real challenged.
Yeah.
Is this a little bit of that, hey, man, everybody loves the backup, and Gordon Beckham used to be an 8-3, you know, to Howdy's point?
It certainly could be. But let's find out. Howdy, what would you think if they signed Brandon Phillips? So Brandon Phillips is 37 years old this year.
He's older than Cano.
He's older than Cano. He's 37 years old. He, you know, if you're a baseball stats guy, his OPS generally has always been sort of in the mid-700s, which makes him kind of a league average player. He gets on base, or he certainly gets hits. I mean, you look at his batting average every year, 260 plus. So, I mean, even just once he's hit 32, 261, 266, 294, 291, 285 last year.
With
Atlanta and then the Angels. He was much better in Atlanta for 120 games. He hit 291 in Atlanta, came to the Angels, and in only 24 games hit just 255. He was not great with the Angels. But, you know, you're talking about a guy who, if you need him for a couple of weeks, could conceivably come in and just hit if he just came in and hit 285 and played regular second base.
Then you leave him there for good. I mean, that's amazing.
I mean, that's what he's done forever. He's always kind of hit 285 and played second base. Right?
Old guys who start in the middle of the season without a spring training typically don't start well.
I would think it would,
and that's not going to work out well, in my opinion.
We saw it with Jason Wirth as well. I mean, he has not been good at all. But I mean, I don't know what kind of shape he's in or whether or not he would be ready to come in and join you. But you got to at least kick the tires on
that, right? So the other conversation: what do you do in the lineup? Is this Haniger's job?
I would have Haniger hitting third. You?
Yes.
Yeah, I would just move Mitch Haniger to third, and everybody moves up one after that.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that one's actually pretty simple. I'd be curious, though, if that's what he does. Let's grab Brandon, who's in Fredrickson. What's up, Brandon?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Well, it's going a little better before Cano took an 88-mile-an-hour fastball and broke his metacarpal, but yeah, all good.
Yeah. I would leave D. Gordon in center. I mean, you've used a lot of time to get him acclimated to center, and it seems like he's still sometimes having trouble tracking the ball.
Yep.
And I would bring up Gordon Beckham.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the plan. And what, 99% of, I think, your gut and my gut, Mike, is that's the move that they're going to make. Beckham has gotten the call up. He's pulled out of the games yesterday, so he's going to come up. He's a guy that has been there, done it. This moment is not going to be too big for him. And if everything I've ever been taught in baseball is about routine, then why would he do that to D? Right, if these guys are creatures of habit, and you want to start to build that routine and build all of these roles for all of these guys.
And it's not because they're afraid of how he'd react. It's just, you know, this is what he does now. And I think the temptation will always be to put him there. And by the way, if it's for the whole year, yeah, I think you probably have to have a pretty serious conversation about it.
And we won't know that
for a couple of weeks to maybe 2 months at the most. I don't think I see it. Let's grab one more call. James is in Tacoma. James, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Well, I have the same idea that just about everyone else has. You don't sign a 31-year-old veteran, work on his swing just to keep him down in Tacoma. So he has to come up. I think that what Howdy was saying about him not beating, Andrew Romine out for the last spot, that's irrelevant because you're also not going to move Beckham around the diamond.
Correct.
As a spot starter like you would Romine. So I think that's the only thing you possibly can do right now, because signing Phillips sounds great with his average, but you're talking maybe 4 weeks, six at the very most.
Yeah.
Yeah, why would you diminish him that way, Howdy? Why would you just diminish Beckham with fake facts? You knew that. The Romine's the guy that's going to be the utility guy and play every position.
Look at the number, I mean, Beckham had a much better spring than Romine.
Why do you got trash on him?
He did.
Like
he also played in 11 games and hit into two double plays last year and also hit 176 for the Mariners.
Okay. Well, those 11 games probably show that he's not a good player.
Well, they're more than zero, and it wasn't good.
More than zero, and it wasn't good. Yeah. All right. Well, Howdy, I know you know more about baseball than to look at 11 games and assume that that's the end of the world.
I'm rooting for
I also know that you have a Gold Glover sitting in center field who could play second base at a Gold
Glover. So this
Glover
is no-brainer for you. You just move D. Gordon second.
Yeah, absolutely. I want the best nine guys on the field because you have no margin for error, and you have to win every game, and you cannot afford to put liabilities in your lineup. You can't do it. And Gordon Beckham, for the majority of his career, is a liability in the lineup, and you can't do it. He's not that great of a second baseman. He never has been. He's been okay.
So,
you can put out a Gold Glove caliber center fielder and second baseman in place of your second baseman right now.
So as I said, it'd been fascinating to be in that room and hear the gears going. I think I'd have been an active listener to Service and DePoto and I don't know who else is involved in that personnel people. And it'd been great to have Howdy right at that table.
Absolutely. Just
this
screaming at
him. It's a no-brainer. All right? We got no margin. Your job's on the line. My job's on the line. Nelly's in the final year of his deal. Felix's wheels are coming off a little bit in his last few. Oh, there is no margin for error.
If I am Boy Howdy, a fantasy baseball maven, this is absolutely the move that I would make. It is the fantasy move. Oh, just move him to second base, of course. Because in Howdy's world, there are no personalities. There is no real world. You can just sort of tell guys to do whatever. Managers don't need to talk to players. Players don't have personalities. Nothing happens. You just make the decision, and the world continues to operate exactly as it was before. Howdy, I'll grant you that in this case, it might actually work out. I don't think anybody has the right answer to this one. You might absolutely be better off moving D. Gordon, and it might not affect him at all. And Guillermo Heredia could come out with the six best weeks of his life and be better against right-handers than everybody thinks. And maybe Gordon Beckham is doing all this in AAA, and he can't possibly do it against major league hitting. All of those things are very possible. They really are. But in terms of what I would bet on, I'd bet on the long term of D. Gordon in center field, knowing that Cano's going to be back within a couple of weeks, and then you're going to have to move him back. I don't want to mess around. I want to get him that experience.
I don't even know if D. Gordon's your long term center fielder.
I think they believe
if in the next 2 years he's at second base with Robbie at first. Mm. You're not even talking about like the future of his career. So at this point,
you're talking about this year. You're talking about September.
Pride in it.
You're talking about August, September, and hopefully October, and trying to make sure that he gets as much experience there as possible. Mm. Chris is in Linwood. He wants to respond to you. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I got a couple of things. I think that, you know, quoting spring training stats and talking about Romine and Beckham, spring training stats are useless. They don't mean anything.
Yep.
And Romine won that job because he's an actual shortstop. He's a better defender. I think that's why Beckham didn't win that job. But he's not a shortstop. So he wasn't an actual viable option for the utility job.
Yep.
And I think that it's, you know, it's not reasonable to say that Cano's just a couple weeks out. Madison Bumgarner's got the same injury. He's been almost 8 weeks out.
Yep.
So I would go Beckham. I don't think there's a good option. I don't know that Brandon Phillips is a better option either. I think you just got to tread water as long as you can. It's kind of smoke and mirrors anyway.
Yeah, and the good news is their lineup should be able to handle it, right? I mean, I know Robbie's been sort of the linchpin of this whole thing. He's the one hitting third every day. But as deep as this lineup is, I think you'd really like to hope that they can handle this, whether it's Guillermo Heredia or Gordon Beckham in the lineup every day.
Yeah, there's a little part of you, though, that would love to see Heredia. I mean, there is. There's just a little part of you that he is the young guy. He's not the 31-year-old. Yes.
But he's still a 27-year-old. It's not like he's 24 or something.
But you would love to have yet another young outfielder of yours, of your control, right, to kind of pop and emerge as well. Makes it a fascinating storyline and one that I think undoubtedly every one of us will be watching here in the weeks ahead, as we will with the news with Robbie tomorrow, as he's going to see the hand specialist, and let's hope it is good news.
All right, good stuff there, and a fun debate. I'm sure we'll continue this one, especially if, God forbid, Gordon Beckham makes an error, Guillermo Heredia hits a home run. I'm sure that everybody will be all over this, so we'll wait and see. And by the way, if D. Gordon makes an error in center field at any point in the next 6 weeks, look out, because Howdy will be coming in hot the next morning. You can pretty much assure yourselves of that. All right, John Nordstrom is going to join us here in just a moment, a former and longtime owner of the Seattle Seahawks and a guy who knows Chuck Knox as well as anybody. He'll join us to talk about the Seahawks coaching legend who passed away over the weekend. We'll talk to him next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from, and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Busy morning here on Brock and Salk. This hour brought to you by Precor Home Fitness. We'll continue to talk some more about Robinson Cano and, how he is replaced here, given the somewhere between 3 to 4, maybe 6 to 8 weeks that he will probably hit the disabled list. My guess is Gordon Beckham will be called up today. Also this morning, the Supreme Court of the United States making a decision to end the federal ban on sports gambling, which means that each state will now be able to make up their own mind on what they want to do. Just so you know, here in Washington, there is currently no bill on the books. There are a bunch of other states. I was just looking at one of these maps.
Mm-hmm.
Vegas, obviously, right now, Nevada, the only state with full-scale legalized sports betting. Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Mississippi have all recently passed a bill, so those would now become okay. And you got another, 10 or 12 states, including California and New York, that have a recent bill that has been introduced but not yet passed. Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and the whole Northwest has not participated in this at all.
We're not gamblers up here, all right?
But we'll see.
We don't have any.
We will see. So we'll come back to that conversation. Otherwise. I think that's maybe a very interesting change, and specifically with the arenas and stadiums and whether or not people will be gambling when they're at a sporting event. I think that will be fascinating. Of course, the other story from this weekend, sad news as Chuck Knox passes away at the age of 86, longtime Seahawks head coach. Stories about him are bountiful and they're all great. I mean, they all speak to how tough he was, what a great quote he was, and how he was able to distill his philosophies down into just a couple of words. John Nordstrom taking a few minutes to join us here in the Venue Kings Hotline. Owned the Seahawks for quite a few years, and during that time got to know Coach Knox very well. John, thanks so much for spending a few minutes with us. How are you?
Good morning, guys.
Well, what do you remember of Coach Knox, John? Maybe your very first interaction or a couple of the first most meaningful moments as you built that relationship with him.
Well, I thought you'd never ask. I was a kind of appointed the new managing partner in the early 80s. We had moved on from our coach and general manager, and we had a players strike right about that time. And so we decided that when we came back to play after the strike play resumed, we had a guy named Mike McCormick who was our super scout, and I had gotten to know pretty well. And he had been a head coach at the Philadelphia Eagles, and it was turned out to be a Hall of Fame left tackle for Cleveland. And he coached us that, what I think he went 5-4 the rest of that season, did pretty well. At the end of the season, he said, I want to be your head coach, and I want to be your permanent head coach. Mm-hmm. And I said, Mike, we need you to be our president and general manager, and I want you and I are going to go out and find a coach. So he reluctantly agreed to that, and we began our search. And we had some calls. John Robinson, the guy at down in Southern California, called and wanted the job, but he wanted it to report directly to me and didn't want to report to Mike McCormick. And I had a day job, so this was kind of a weekend job for me as managing partner. So that wasn't going to work. We got a call from Marv Levy. And by gosh, we brought him in. I remember we had dinner at Trader Vic's. And afterwards I said to Mike, I said, that guy is probably a really good coach, but he's way too smart for us. And he came across as a kind of intellectual guy that, and I loved the guy, but for some reason, we kept searching. And a guy named Brock, you may remember this name, Daryl Rogers, the guy that was down at Arizona State as college coach. And he wanted the job. And Hank Stram called, and he wanted the job. And so Mike and I were kind of flailing around. And one day, Mike's phone rang, and it was Chuck Knox. And so Mike called me immediately, and he said, you know who just called me? I said, who is Chuck Knox? And I said, oh, my gosh, is that the guy that just took two teams to the playoffs 5 years in a row, Buffalo and the Rams? Yep, that's the guy. And I said, can we get him? He said, yeah, he wants the job. And I said, why does he want the job? He'd been so successful in Buffalo. And he said, well, I'm not sure why he really wants it, but he really, really wants our job. So I said, let's go. Let's bring him on board. And I recall that when he arrived on the airplane down out at SeaTac, and I can't remember, but he had maybe a couple thousand people greeted the airplane. They were so excited about Chuck Knox coming to be our coach, and he was everything they say. He was a tough guy. Nice guy. He was completely honest. Absolutely, you could bank on him to follow up on everything he said. He had one thing that I thought was really kind of interesting. He did not like to play young players. He didn't like to play rookies. Mm. So we would have these draft choices come in and look really good and play well in preseason. I said, Chuck, what do you think? Well, oh, yeah, we're going to play him. He's the first game. You're going to see him a lot. Of course, he never saw the field. he was just completely uncomfortable with young players. But when we went to the, I don't remember the exact year, but there was a draft when a young guy named Kurt Warner was going to be in the draft. And Chuck flew back to Kurt Warner's hometown and had dinner with him, met with his, he was raised by his grandparents, got to know his grandparents, and Chuck went back all by himself and did that scouting, and he came back and he told Mike and he told me, I want that guy. I want Kurt Warner on our team. So, and I don't remember what first round draft choice we had, but it looked like Kurt Warner was going to go in maybe the top three picks. Mm-hmm. And so we had to trade up. And Mike found a guy named Ladd Herzig in Houston, general manager, who was willing to do some trading. And I can remember sitting in Mike's office I think the draft was on Tuesday in those years, sitting in Mike's office and talking to Ladd Herzig on the phone on a Sunday, and we offered him our our third and fourth round draft choice to move up from our pick to the third pick. And he came back and said, no, that's not going to work. He said, I want your second, and I want your third, and I want your fourth.
Wow.
Three picks. Woo! So Mike and I, we were really agonizing because we knew Chuck really wanted Kurt Warner.
Awesome.
And so we finally settled on giving him our second and our third round pick to move up to take Kurt Warner. And I can remember calling Chuck and telling him we'd done it, and he, yeah, okay, great, that's fine. You know, he never got very excited about
Jeez.
Anything we were doing.
Even so, after all that.
I got a ton of Chuck stories, but they go on and on.
That's awesome.
He was a piece of work. He really was.
You can hear it in your voice, John, and getting to know you over the last few years, I know that you speak, when you speak of him, you speak with great knowledge and with great reverence. So we appreciate a few of the stories. We'll be honoring him throughout the morning today, and Dave Wyman, who played for him, of course, will join us coming up here in about 20 minutes or so. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right,
Thank you, John.
There is Mr. Nordstrom, John Nordstrom himself, of course, owned the team in those days, and he, as you can tell, has a lot of stories and yes. a lot of feelings about Chuck
Well,
Knox.
Let me just tell you something.
Yeah.
Okay, that plays perfectly into one of these pieces of sound we're going to play in Good News, Bad News, No News, where LeBron and John Nordstrom are very different than you and I.
Yes.
And I'm very worried about it.
What does LeBron have in common with John Nordstrom and not with me and Brock?
Yes.
Find out next on Brock and Salk.
Meritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. When you hear the side is retired, we're referring to those old guys taking shots of BSB at the side of the bar.
You can't spell baseball without BSB.
Meritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Hey, this is Danny O'Neill from the Danny Dave and Moore Show. Thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. I'd really appreciate it if you checked out Danny Dave and Moore. We're kind of charming, very fun. It's every afternoon from 3 to 7. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
Good news.
Yeah!
Bad news. No news. Now, here's Brock and Salk.
That was fun listening to Mr. Nordstrom himself. Every time we're down near Seahawks facility, and Brock and I, if we run into Mr. Nordstrom, that's always great. Just hearing his stories and hearing his time around the team. And you and I both read his book, his autobiography, talking about his life and his way of raising his kids and the way he built Nordstrom and the way he dealt with the Seahawks. He's a pretty interesting guy. And so to hear his stories about Chuck Knox, a lot of fun. We'll hear from Dave Wyman as well. That's coming up here in about 15 minutes. There's a lot going on in the news today, so let's get to it.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The U.S. Supreme Court voted 7-2 this morning to overturn the federal ban on sports gambling.
I have a hard time with it. I'm just not... It was illegal for me through college, through pros, in my job. I just don't do it yet. I know it is everywhere. It's everywhere. To be honest, I guess it's good news.
How do you handle
it? It puts it on the states to go and handle on their own.
How do you handle in general things that were illegal that become legal?
Yeah.
Because you are a very moral human.
Yes, I am.
Take this away from gambling.
Yes.
How do you handle the idea of marijuana?
Slippery slopes.
But they're illegal now.
Slippery slopes.
The government has decided.
Sure.
That those things
that's
are
because
now
it's legal doesn't mean it's moral or it's right.
But they're saying that it was not worth being illegal. How do you handle that?
What I just said.
Because you'll gamble. I've seen you play hand to a blackjack.
I mean, a little bit of blackjack, sure.
There's no moral absolutism in that.
Yeah,
not with
gambling in that way. But again, now you start to get into. You know, the danger for me is just that person that doesn't have the money to go and gamble.
Right.
That person that is going to fall into that hole, into that addiction, and into that brokenness.
But isn't aren't a lot of those people already doing it? I know this is an interesting one. Asking you guys on Twitter, of 1,000 votes roughly, 2/3 of you say this won't change your life at all.
Yeah.
But that means a third of you say it will, and about 23% right now saying you would gamble more from home online.
Yeah.
And about 10% saying, oh, yeah, if it's available at games or events and stadiums and arenas, yeah, I'll gamble there. I think that's the only way it will change my life personally.
Right.
I won't play at home. That doesn't interest me. But if I were at an arena with some friends and we're having a couple of beers and you could bet on a couple of things happening right in front of you in the moment, yeah, I would do that for small money. But I'm just not a big sports bettor. Yeah. I would prefer this will change the game though. I think this is
good
big news. I don't know whether it's good or bad yet, but it's definitely big news for now.
Big news.
Good news, bad news, no news.
The Cavs lost game one of the Eastern Conference Finals by 25, and they await the Warriors in the NBA Finals.
Howdy, this doesn't fit your script. What's going on?
It fits perfectly. It doesn't really matter how many games it takes. They're just going to await the
Warriors.
And Warriors
Rockets
finals.
Begin tonight. That will be must-see watching in the Hewitt home for sure. Titus all in on that.
Right.
Did not get a chance to see that yesterday.
Definitely in the Salk and Howdy home swell.
Game one
Howdy
loss.
And I are bringing our families together to watch
game
that.
Game one loss, no news. No news. See me in game seven.
What did you think of this? Yeah, no news. I don't care. Did you see this LeBron thing, though? So after the game, LeBron was asked about the fourth quarter, and apparently he's got a photographic memory.
The start of the fourth, I think they cut it to 14. Do you have any idea what? I mean, I think they scored seven quick ones. Anything? What happened there?
What happened? We ran them the first possession. We ran them down all the way to two on the shot clock. Marcus Morris missed a jump shot, followed it up. They got a dunk. We came back down. We ran a set for Jordan Clarkson, and he came off and missed it. They rebounded it, and we came back on the defensive end, and we got a stop. They took it out on the sideline. Jason Tatum took the ball out, threw it to Marcus Smart in the short corner. He made a three. We come back down, missed another shot, and then Tatum came down and went 94 feet, did a Euro step, and made a right-hand layup timeout. There you go.
You could do that, right, bro?
Mr. Nordstrom could do that, okay, because he did it with all the interviews. He remembered every one of those, even the details of the restaurant. Turn your sheet over right now.
Okay.
Don't be looking at your show sheet. What do we do and need to know?
What were the three things you need to know today?
Give me the order of the three things
I need to know.
Give me the three things.
Mariners lose 2 out of 3, okay. Blame it on Juan Nicasio, right. And Chuck Knox passed away.
It's the Blue 42, so you should, no way.
Blue 40, you want me to do the Blue 42, or does Brock have to do them?
No, what were the questions?
Can you
what
do the Blue 42s?
What were my?
Can you do the Blue 42s?
I believe I can.
Do you?
We'll see, it was an hour ago, I'm not looking either. The first one was who's the Chuck Knox of today?
Right.
And my answer was?
You started off by saying, what's his name? From Tom Coughlin.
Okay, good. And the college coach?
College coach, I don't remember.
Okay, that was David Shaw.
Oh, yeah, I do remember.
The next question was the two Seahawks that have really stood out here in the phase one and two of the offseason.
And my answer was? Two Seahawks that have really stood out were Ethan Posick.
Good.
And Bobby Wagner.
Nice! And then the last one, we asked about the undrafted free agents.
That's right.
And you said how many of them make the team? Good.
Hopefully not too
many. There we go. Okay.
Yeah, we're on that.
All right. We're not that
we're
done yet.
We're just like LeBron.
Good news, just bad like news.
Let's see. At 7:45, we did Blue 42. I came back down. I asked him about undrafted free agents.
That was impressive, though. I'll give him that.
Robbie Cano, sadly, breaking his fifth metacarpal in his hand after being hit by a fastball yesterday.
Yeah, that's bad news any way you look at it. This team does have, it has no margin, and he's been one of the best players in the lineup. I don't care what the stats or the numbers say. His influence in that lineup on a daily basis will be the most missed. We will know tomorrow if it's horrific news. So he sees the hand specialist in Philadelphia, and they're going to determine how significant a break it is, if there's surgery required, and whether it's going to be 4 weeks or 8 weeks.
It's bad news no matter how you slice it, Brock. I mean, he's one of your best players. He's there every single night. He's somebody you count on. It is an opportunity for Haniger, and hopefully we'll see if it's an opportunity for somebody like Gordon Beckham. But it's bad news. This makes your team not as good as it was yesterday. So there you go. That's bad news there. And good news, bad news, no news. I'd also really like to hear something about this Mariner bullpen, and maybe we'll come back to it here at 9:15. Mm. You know, we can sit here and talk about losing Robbie Cano and this, that, and the other, but if Juan Nicasio keeps giving up every lead in the eighth inning...
Does he have enough stuff?
No.
I mean, does he have enough...
I don't think
does
so.
Does he have enough stuff to do and play into that role?
I mean, at 95 to 97, which is where his fastball should be,
yes.
I mean, that should be enough to set up a slider, but when I see him, I see Joaquin Benoit. I see a guy whose slider isn't sharp enough, doesn't have enough depth, as Scott Service says. Now, maybe he's been different in the past. I did not watch him in the past. I know he was really good last year, really for the last couple, but from what I see, No. Danny, have you guys seen an eighth inning guy, like your second best reliever on a good team when you watch Juan Nicasio?
Mm-mm.
Do you see that, Lydia? Do you see that, Howdy? I mean, do you see him as your primary center?
I saw it for that stretch when he and Edwin Diaz were on fire in the eighth and ninth. There, you saw a preview of what it could be, but I think he's been overused. I think that's just that he's tired. And then you've got guys like Mark Sepchinski who can...
Can't
supposed to come
right
in
now.
To give you one out and can't do that. So
I don't think their bullpen's been good enough to not overuse them, and that's the problem you run into. I mean, you know, you're throwing out Goodell and Bradford and Sepchinski and Casey Lawrence. I mean, those are not the names that you want to see for a killer bullpen on a really good team. So I would say Jerry DePoto's got some work ahead of him. I think if you want to try to compete, you've got to start to find a way to rebuild that bullpen over the course of these next few weeks, and you just got to let the Robinson Cano chips fall where they may. You got to do the best you can. You've got a deep lineup. If you want to fix this thing, you've got to start dealing with that bullpen that I don't think right now is unfortunately good enough. All right. The tough news over the weekend, Chuck Knox passes away. A lot of great memories from people around Seattle of the legendary head coach. No one has more of them than Dave Wyman, who played for him for years. And Brock, as I think you've put perfectly, essentially reminds you of him. So Dave will join us. We'll swap some stories. We'll hear from him coming up on Brock and Salk.